All right, let's go ahead and call the meeting to order. Cam, you want to take roll call?
Sure. Chair Doyle.
Here.
Director Cooper.
Here.
Director Phillips.
Here.
Everyone's here.
Sounds like we got a quorum. Any guests?
No.
Besides Mike? Yeah.
Besides Mike, besides our operator.
Okay, sounds good. So that would mean no public comment. We've got no presentations. The consent agenda.
Make a motion to approve.
I'll second it.
We got a motion for an approval on the consent agenda. We got a second. And is there any comment on this item, these items? Hearing none, let's go ahead and do a roll call vote, Cammie.
I'm Director Phillips.
Aye.
Director Cooper.
Aye.
Chair Doyle.
Aye.
Okay.
So we got that approved unanimously. The regular agenda, nothing's removed from the consent agenda. The general business, item six, we've got no new business. So I guess at this point, Cammie, unless you have any issues, we can move right on to the water operations business.
Yes, the daily log. It's all you, Mike.
Okay, great. Can you guys hear me? I got my headphones in, so.
Yep, we got you, Mike. Cool. How you doing?
Been better. This smoke's really kind of taking a toll on me. I'm just tired all the time. I'm up in Paradise, so like it's just really bad. I had to buy like $1,400 worth of HEPA filters because I got a baby on the way. It's gonna be here in like 2 months, and
what?
I keep So my wife, she's due in 2 months, and it's just really wearing her out. So I got a really high end one, and we're just hunkering down inside. So yeah, other than that, I'm good.
Well, the air quality seemed a little bit better today. Was it any better up there, or is it just the smoke's moving up there?
Night and day. Yesterday it was bad, but it's just, I think it's just the long-term exposure is what's kind of wearing on me. Just constantly breathing it in, you know, working and stuff like that. So it's all good though. I had the same issue last year when it was smoky. I mean, it's living in California, unfortunately.
And the year before, right?
Unfortunately. So anyways, for the daily log, it was actually a really busy month last month. And had a couple things happen. I had some interesting, let me see, look at this. I had a call, basically a gal said that there's like a terrible noise coming from the library sites. I think what happened, I can't prove this, but we had some equipment damage at our Holland site when PG&E de-energized God, I'm so sorry. I'm having a hard time speaking today. Basically at the library site, there's a little thing that modulates control power, and it's small circuitry. It just stopped working. So that basically shut the pump off. So I had North State come out, and they repaired it, and the pump fired right back up, checked all the aux equipment, and everything was fine. Let's see.
Was that the one that had the noise on it, Mike, or was that something different?
That was later on in the month.
I
got a call that there was a terrible noise coming from the library site later on, and it was the generator running. When I got on site, I looked up at the pole, and one of the fuses on the PG&E pole was blown. So I called PG&E out. Prior to them coming out, I fully isolated the library site from PG&E's equipment so that when they re-energize, nothing would be exposed to overcurrent or anything like that. So once they fixed the fuse, fired everything up, everything's been working fine since then. I checked the voltage across all three lakes. It was all stable, 480. And then let's see here, what else do we have? I had hung notices for repair. We had a while ago, I had a complaint of like a leak, and I could not find this leak for the life of me. And I tried getting in contact with the property owner to help me, you know, point out, and they wouldn't return any of my calls. I can't get on their property because they have a really aggressive German Shepherd. So I kind of just was just waiting to hear back from, well, I finally found the leak, and it was basically, it's behind the alley site in a forest of ivy. I mean, you, without like going into the bushes, like you probably wouldn't have ever found it. So I found that leak, and I recently just had JC Hernandez clear out a opening so that we can actually get to it and get some repairs done on that. So that'll be this month.
That was that leak from like 5 months ago, right? Where that
person
called? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we finally found it. Let's see here. And then I had some more leaks on the Brown Faber pipeline. You know, big surprise. So we got one fixed, and then later on another one popped up, and I had them do a, I had them just, I didn't shut down the pipe, I had the, or the water, because I didn't want to shut it off anymore on that line, because I'm worried about the integrity of the line. So I had them fix it while it was pressurized and blasting on them. So, but they got it done, so that was nice. And since then, I only have one small leak that just recently popped up, and I've been checking on it every day, and it's kind of staying the same, hasn't really gotten out of hand. And then I had a leak off of Durham Dayton that Raymond actually pointed out to me. I don't know how I missed it, but we had a little bit of an issue getting this one done. There's two services. We originally thought that only one was damaged because there was just so much water in that trench. If you can imagine, it's basically just a 700 foot trench of sand that pipe's laying on top of. So we got it patched up. Everything looked good, but when we came back the next day, it still seemed like it was leaking, and we dug up the line a little bit further down and found that another service was damaged as well as the one that we replaced. So we got that fixed. And then that's kind of the gist of it. I just got a quote. Finally, I've been bugging John every week for a parts list to get a rough estimate of what it's going to cost for everything. Looking at both bids, they were missing, you know. I told Chris that I was going to get the parts taken care of, but I think R&R Horn's bid was missing a whole bunch of parts that it's going to take to get the job done. So I'm going to shoot that over to Jeannie, and then she'll get it over to you guys. Or I could just mass email it to you guys, whatever you prefer. And then that's pretty much it. It's, you know, it's been kind of a busy month, last month.
You've been patching holes left and right, Mike. So thank you. That's seems like there's, when it rains, it pours on that deal. And it seems like it's been nonstop. I have a question on the quotes. This is for the whole pipeline replacement. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. And I just wanted to provide a little context on the quotes. So just for me, just in every trade that I've ever done, I always like way overbid. So when I asked Chris about, you know, to put up a quote for the district, I asked him to, you know, bid like a doomsday scenario. So looking at his quote, he did inform me that it would most likely be 15,000 to 20,000 dollars cheaper. He just wanted to kind of give you like the high end of a quote. And then R&R, I don't know how they structured that bid. I don't know if, because it seemed kind of a little bit low off of what Mark had originally shot over to me, which was like 111,000, I think. And he had mentioned that he had bid it kind of high, and he got all of his info from Jared at R&R. So when he says I bid it high, I didn't think that he, you know, bid it, you know, double the cost. I figured maybe he'd do a little bit. So like maybe like a 30% increase max, but either way, yeah, that's what the quotes are for, is for the pipeline replacement.
And this was for the one that we have to go out with, not competitive. What is it? Prevailing wages. Is that how these were both bid?
Yes.
Okay. And then, yeah, there seems like to be a huge difference between what Mark estimated and what the two companies came back with. You mentioned they might have been missing some the parts that maybe Mark had included, but why the difference?
I honestly don't know, because I mean, with Mark, I'd have to pull up his quote real quick, but
I didn't include the engineer's estimate in our packet.
Just from another perspective too on it, these type of jobs have been beating engineers' estimates quite a bit recently. I don't know, Raymond, if you can speak on this too, but from some of the road work jobs that we've done, they've been way under the engineers' estimates. And so I think there is a little bit of competitive bidding going on, and people are sharpening their pencil out there too. So I don't think these being way under engineers' estimates at this point in time is something that's out of the norm in the current environment.
Right, I concur. I mean, the primary purpose of an engineer's estimate is mainly for bonding. The actual cost of the job, really the experts or the contractor. I'm just a little concerned that we don't have an apples to apples bid here. If R&R didn't include some stuff and Chris Brown overestimated stuff at our request, I mean, are we going to be able to make a selection based on an apples to apples comparison here? I'm a little nervous about that.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with Raymond on that too. And you know, I don't know if Chris is doing too many government jobs, but just a little of a suggestion is you always kind of bid it to based on best case scenario instead of worst case scenario.
That's good. That's all on me, honestly, because that's what I asked of him. I could definitely get another bid from him to provide a little bit more clarity, because there's no, I mean, God, I really don't want to say this, but there's no rush so far. We're not having any major leaks on the pipeline. So I can get a revised bid from them. And then also I can get the parts list that I made up, which I feel, the quote will get, it's $27,000 in parts. And that's for all the piping, the saddles, the every single fitting, everything. It's all in there that we need to get the job done. We might need a little bit of materials, but I mean, it's pretty refined. I spent a lot of time on putting this parts list together. So I'm sure that the parts part is fine. I think maybe I could get a revised bid from Chris to, or another thing that we could do is just get a rate sheet from both R&R Horn and Brown, and we can have like an itemized cost, hourly, like man hours, equipment, everything, and then we could compare there. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
We can't really ask Chris for another estimate without asking R&R for another estimate, because now these are out in the wild here, so to speak.
Yep.
And Chris has seen what Richard's price is, so we can't really tell him that. I think if we're going to ask one for another estimate, maybe clean up our specifications, so to speak, and ask them both, you know.
Oh, no. Oh, totally. Yeah, no, I'll get bids from both parties for sure.
Yeah, and normally, and Raymond, you can speak on this more than I can, but normally those worst case scenarios are handled through change orders through a contract. So as there's delays that are unexpected, those would be handled through a change order. Normal government contracts are not to exceed, so that we can tell our ratepayers that we're making the most prudent decision of a not to exceed contract for the public work that we're trying to accomplish. And I'm sure R&R bit it in that direction. I don't expect theirs to change much, but I agree with Raymond. We definitely have to go back to them and let them know that we're reopening this based on, refining our specs on something like that, and let them revise their bid if they would like.
Maybe what we could do is some of the line items are similar in name, but one has more than the other. So maybe we could list all of those tasks and have them cost the same tasks, if that would make sense.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Like
one has clear and grub, one has the 6-inch pipe installation, and they have like connections. So maybe we have all of those listed so they're consistent, and that's what they bid on.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I apologize, guys. This is kind of new to me. So I will definitely work on that and get
you're fine.
Better. Okay.
No need to apologize at all.
Okay, great.
Yeah, Mike, don't feel bad. I mean, like if you want some help, we can get, you know, North Star to actually, you know, I mean, that's kind of what you do anyways, is you take the items that hopefully North Star listed all the items that we need, you know, numbers on. And that would be, you know, the items that the contractors would bid on. And, if you want some assistance, you know, help with that, we can talk to them and have them actually put together a bid package where, R&R and Chris Brown and Knife River or whoever else wants to, you know, actually submit sealed bids based on a list of items prepared by either you or North Star or your guys' collaboration or something of that
Raymond, I like that idea, especially on maybe the first bid that we're going out for kind of a larger pipeline like this, to kind of create that kind of that template of what we're looking for. And then that would give guidance so that every time now, when, because this is not going to be the first time we do this, we have a little bit of guidance there that you can then just follow those guidance on additional bidding.
Good idea.
Jeannie can help you with that, Mike, as well. So maybe you coordinating with North Star and Jeannie can help with that process.
Okay. Yeah perfect.
If you tell North Star you want to bid a bit itemized bid package, they'll know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, and I mean, we don't want to throw this all on the back on top of Mike's shoulders either. You know, I mean, his main focus needs to be, you know, operating the district and overseeing the work that happens for the district, you know, preparing an actual bid package. That probably really isn't what we should be expecting Mike to do.
I agree. Yeah.
I agree.
Okay.
So North Star. North Star should be the one that does it for us.
Yeah.
Okie doke. Okay. Well, that makes me feel better. Okay, so that's that. Let me see here. I mean, so that kind of wraps it up. I'll
be right back.
So I'm guessing I'll just get with Jeannie and let her know what, or should I just email Mark?
No, have Jeannie do that, Mike. I think what we need to make sure is kind of get that administrative stuff off your plate so that you can go run the district. And I think, like Kevin mentioned, I think the more that we can push that to Jeannie to coordinate, I think the better, because there will be back and forth, and then she can call you if need be.
Okay, great.
Do we need Mike to call Jeannie, or Cammie, can you relay that?
I can, it's on my list. Okay.
Perfect, thank you.
Before we leave, Mike, I got a question about the way you logged your hours on the operator log. So do you show everything that's over 2 hours in a day as being extra? Or I can't remember how we worded the contract.
So I'll have to go back and look, but from what I got, anything extra, so there, I separated the weekend hours from extra hours. So now extra hours, instead of it being 125 an hour, I bumped it down, or we negotiated that it'd be $55 an hour for over the 2 hours in a day. So I don't know. I just was for the days when I'm logging my hours, you know, if I'm there over 2 hours, I put the additional hours over the two that I was there on that day in the additional hours column. And then I have an after hours column, which is basically any calls after 6 o'clock. That's after hours. And then on the weekends as well.
Right. I understand that. Hours. Yeah, I totally get that. I guess my question is more about the additional hours. I was kind of under the assumption that those only kicked in after the 48 hours in the month. So like the regular hours should always be 48, and then anything above the 48 should be the additional. Maybe you can take a look at the contract, Cammie, and make sure that I'm interpreting that
okay
correctly.
Okay. Yeah. If I need to revise anything, you know, I'll definitely do that. I've just kind of just been going off of the web and logging my hours in the past. So let's see here.
The only other item on the list is the pressure tank terms and conditions. And so last month we had asked them to give us maybe a cost that we were looking at, which was, they said, what was it? The $77,000, which was a little more than what was originally. I think my concern about the terms and conditions from last time is it didn't include shipping. And so I didn't know if that cost that he gave us, Mike, was including shipping, because the way the terms and conditions read is once we purchase it, we're stuck with it. But I didn't want the shipping cost to add like another $20,000 onto whatever they give us. So it was, I think that's was my concern last month.
Yeah, let me see. I'll pull up the last email from him.
Is that this one from, was this from Durham Pump, or is this from the tank supplier?
Yeah. So the terms, it's from Durham Pump. So it's not to exceed costs based on those below 77K. Blah, blah, blah.
But in the terms and conditions, it doesn't include shipping.
Yeah.
So I'm curious as to what their idea, how much the shipping might be. I don't know where it's coming from. If it's coming from Chico,
Los Angeles.
Yeah.
But so, I mean,
that can be significant for something of that size. That was all.
Oh, absolutely. Freight is ridiculous right now. So, especially here in California. So let me see. I can try and get an estimate. I feel like if he would have been able to provide that information, he would have. But honestly, it's kind of frustrating, the lack of transparency with this whole tank replacement.
Is this, Cam, is this something that we could maybe get Jeannie's assistance on as well? Yeah. This seems like it's a kind of a project management thing that Jeannie would excel at.
Yeah.
Because this would really take some of this off Mike's plate, because I think some of it's the back and forth that we do with vendors if we've got the time to do it. But Mike's out in the field trying to manage customers and take phone calls at the same time. I can hear his challenge on getting it all in a day.
Yes, well, Jeannie can definitely do that.
I mean, this would be, I mean, I think she would excel at that.
Yeah, she would love to do it, actually.
Yeah, and I think, like Mike, we were talking about on the other one, I think use Jeannie for all this stuff. I mean, this is something she's very good at.
Absolutely. I'll definitely utilize her. Going forward, because it would take a lot off of my plate for sure.
Yeah, the back and forth dance with suppliers these days from lead times and everything else is just a real challenge. So let her run that down for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Cammie, you'll talk to her about that. She can get a freight rate on there, and then we can then we'll get a final number on that. And then, I guess we're going to have to push this to next month's meeting to get it approved, or are we waiting for a final or what?
It's whatever you guys want to do. I think it also says in there, how long it would take to estimate for delivery.
So it's $77,150, not including freight of the tank. Is that correct?
Yeah. It doesn't include shipping costs, crating, in-shop inspection, structural calculations, PE signature, taxes, duties, or related fees.
And it's over 2 tons.
Yeah.
So we need, I suggest we bring this back if it's not mission critical, with a not to exceed amount that we can approve.
Okay.
Yeah, and it sounds like maybe our pipeline project is kind of taking precedence over this one at the moment.
I would agree.
Okay. Hold on. Okay. Perfect.
All right. Thank so we'll revisit that, and then get a final number on that. Have Jeannie help us out with that, and also on the pipeline project. And then we'll get both firm numbers, get those put together so that we can review and discuss priority and approval next month.
Okay.
Any Raymond or Kevin, anything else on that do we want to add?
No, I like what you just said.
Yeah, it might be good to see what the in number is on that pipeline project, so that we can deduct that from what we have on the financial statements to give us a better estimate on if we're going to pull the trigger on this project here right now.
Yeah. I agree. All right. All right, Mike, anything else? Anything else on your report?
Nope, that's it.
That's great. Thank you. Thanks for everything. And keep up the good work.
Thanks,
awesome.
Mike.
Thanks. Yeah, anytime.
Thanks, Mike.
Can I ask one thing with Mike too? With air quality, I know, are you limiting your time outside during work hours for DID? And then do you have proper PPE to be outside during those work hours if necessary?
I am kind of limiting my hours this month. I do have some N95 masks that I'm using. I'm kind of just trying to play my schedule. How do I say this? So I know that I'm going to have 2 days where I'm going to be in town. I have one leak off Good Speed, and then I have another behind the alley site that I'm going to be involved in. So I'm just kind of doing my basic checks and then just handling any like emergency stuff. I'm not really trying to do like meter installs and things of that nature right now.
And then with a new child coming here shortly, are you planning on taking some time off, and do you need some backup for that?
No, I'm my wife's going to be at home. She's going to be taking time off. And then, I'm never on vacation. So,
okay.
I'm here.
Sounds good. Just want to make sure.
Okay.
Mike's a workaholic.
It's not a good thing, honestly. I need some help. I'm young. I can still grind for a little bit longer before I hire somebody. So,
yeah. You're going to have two kids. You're not going to be young that much longer.
I know.
All right. Sounds good, Mike. Thanks.
Yep.
All right. Jeff, number 8, attorney report.
I will go in order. First of all, as I communicated with you, Jeannie was able to turn over a contract, a well construction reimbursement agreement between the district and Durham Valley Development. It was entered back in 1991. So all of those questions that came to us by Dick Jones, which I had been poo-pooing and which I had spoken to a previous director about, were true. There was an agreement. The agreement requires that $29,000 of the cost of installing the subject well, which I think was about $47,000, $48,000, be subject to reimbursement if other users outside of his subdivision were connected to that well. The rate was at the amount of $900 per acre. So that if your parcel was on a 1/3 acre, you would pay $300 of that $900 rate. The reimbursement period was only for a period of 5 years, from 91 through 96. And I've asked Jeannie to advise as to whether there have been any connections from that area that connected to the well during those 5 years, if she could check the records. I don't know how she would do that. I'm hoping that there is some way for her to check to see what connections were made and the location of those during those 5 years, because that would be the best way to do it. So that's what the agreement provides. The agreement, of course, is old. It lasted only until 1996. Presumably, Jones would have known as to whether or not there had been connections done during those 5 years by at least the year the contract terminated. So there's a question as to whether or not the contract is enforceable. For breach of a written contract, there's a 5-year statute of limitations. This is not one where I think Jones would be able to clarify that we withheld information that contributed to it. I think he very well has kept an eye and an ear to the ground in Durham, and probably knew or should have known that there had been connections, if there were connections during that time period. So at this stage, I'm not prepared to tell you what we need to do, and we'll have to do that in closed session because it may very well be that we are electing certain legal options under that. But that is the contract. The older director, and I forget his name that I spoke to, he still works there in Durham, and you all knew him. He, I think, got off the board in 1989, so he would have been unaware of this contract. So Raymond, you probably know best of anybody in the area of that well. Were there any connections to it during the first 5 years of the development there, the subdivision, that you know of that were outside of the subdivision?
What were the years again? The years span?
1991 through 1996, 5 years from 1991.
I'm pretty sure the Durham Vintage Estate subdivision there across the street.
Durham Vintage?
Yeah, 92.
Raymond, do you think the best way for Jeannie to determine that is to go to the county and look at building records?
The development services should have all the subdivision map and how that subdivision was approved. I mean, that's a modern subdivision there. Okay. And that's all the Teal and Duffling streets.
Okay.
I talked to
it was a Schuster development.
That's the name that I was thinking of, Schuster. That's what came to my mind, and I forget how I got that information, but Schuster was the only plausible person that the person I spoke to could remember.
Yeah, I mean, I worked on that subdivision for a contractor, and I worked for that contractor from 89 through 94.
And that was Durham Vintage was the name of the subdivision?
Yep.
Okay. Well, that'd give us something to check. And we'll gather some more information. And simply we have to just continue this to the next meeting, to the September meeting. But I think you need to think about what tact we want to take. No doubt Jones is working with Keeney on Creekside, and I suspected early on that his questions were perhaps not only relating to his own investment in this project, but also with the respect to Keeney's project on Creekside. We have to bear in mind that however we choose to react to this could potentially maybe affect our dealings with Keeney and Creekside. We did receive a email from Wes today that I responded to, Wes Gilbert, indicating that the county had not circulated the EIR with, was it the Department of Housing in Sacramento? They have had to push back the clock on Creekside, and so there's no hurry on forcing the issue on Creekside. Wes was responding to my letter to them of probably a month ago about the stages of the contract.
And did we add the easement language?
Yes, and I added some easement language. So I'll be sending that. It's actually fortuitous. Mark has suggested, as you know, that we have a easement across the property for installation of a water line connecting to back to the Midway if we should ever loop. And so I've very generally described an easement. There's a entry road that comes in on the center of the subdivision and winds its way down to the southwest corner. And there are two lots at the southwest corner served by this cul-de-sac. And I basically said that it would be 20 foot wide water easement extending down the road or to the side of the road, excuse me. And that when we got to the two lots at the end, it would be 10 foot of either side of the dividing line. So we do have to revisit that. I think we need some more information from Jeannie at this time. And I think the Schuster development will give her some direction as to where to get that. Any idea, Raymond, what number of houses we're looking at? How many acres were developed?
I can tell you here in just a second.
Is that the development located south of there, Raymond?
South of, it's located directly east of the well site.
Oh. That's a Teal Lane in that area?
Yeah.
Oh boy, I bet you there's 30, 40 houses in there.
I know.
One, two, three, four, five, six, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 plus the original house on the, and they're all 1 acre lots, so you're looking at about 18 acres.
So the question is, how many of those were built in that 5 year window, and that we'll have to determine. But I don't want to get back to Jones or provide any information to Jones until such time that we've vetted this and have determined how we intend to proceed with it.
So yeah. The agreement was that for every 1 acre parcel, we'd pay him $900 as
compensation
for being allowed to hook into the well that he originally footed the entire bill for.
Yes.
Okay.
Is it when the house is built or when the lot is developed when that kicks in?
My thinking would be is when it's developed and connected.
You know, another thing you can do, and I have Google Earth Pro at work, and you can do a time lapse on that, and you can go back to 96. It sometimes misses certain years or whatever, but I don't know. God, I don't know how far if it goes back, but I'll look at Ag Land and it goes back quite a ways. Oh, wow. So it might be a good, it might be a starting place is to look at the 96 Google Earth Pro version, and you'll be able to fly over the top of that. And within a year or two or three, you should be able to see if there is any. And if it was at a time when you have time lapse on it, you can get it right up until the time the agreement was over and see how many places are built and start from there.
Yes.
And we can confirm the address.
Should we take this back into close or have this as closed session because it seems like it's a little negotiated.
Yep.
That was probably the right call, Kevin. Thanks.
I participated in a county sponsored meeting with Tony Sims. Mark Adams and I attended. Nothing unusual. He acknowledges the service agreement that he has with us. He is going to abide by the terms of it. The county inquired as to whether the service installations would be made when he's cutting the subdivision, providing the road, or whether it would wait for the sale of the lots. I volunteered that it's easier to put service installations in prior to improving the land rather than afterwards. And Sims agreed with that. I think Sims is a responsible developer. So I think that was his plan all along. He also indicated that he would build, he acknowledged his obligation to continue the water line running along Durham-Dayton on the south side of the road that Keeney will be putting in through the frontage of his lot on Durham-Dayton Road. And he had absolutely no problem executing a memorandum of our service agreement so we can have that recorded, so that any lender providing money to the development would know of his obligations under the service agreement. So it was a very productive meeting.
That's great.
And then if I can add one matter that came up just in the late breaking hours of this afternoon, the county clerk's office has asked us to either give them a copy of the resolution pursuant to which we adopted the language of the initiative as a resolution of the district, or alternatively request that it be put on the next general elections ballot. That's a no-brainer. We'll be asking that it be put on the next general election ballot. So I would just do a quick little response to the county clerk about that.
Oh, are you talking about Buttons?
Yeah, Pat Buttons, uh-huh, the initiative.
He switched topics.
Excuse me. Yeah, that was a late breaking addition this afternoon.
Can you repeat that, please?
Yes. The county clerk has requested that we either notify it with respect to the initiative petition that was circulated by Pat Button, since it did secure enough signatures, whether we have adopted or will adopt a resolution making that initiative effective for the district without an election, or whether instead we wish it to be placed on the ballot of the next general election in the district.
Okay.
So I assume that we unanimously do not wish to adopt a resolution incorporating that resolution as an act of the board. So the only alternative we have is to ask the clerk to place it on the next ballot in the next general election. I have no idea how much that's going to cost, but I think in my letter to the clerk, I will indicate that we don't have money to pay for this, and we look to the county to cover the cost of this.
And ask for an estimated cost, please.
Exactly. That is all my report.
Thank you, Jeff. Any questions from the board? Raymond, Kevin, any questions?
Nope, not for Mr. Carter.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. Let's move along to the manager's report. Cammy?
Just one item, which is just the will serve letter to Tony Sims for the house on San Rafael Court. He needed to get a will serve letter so that they could finalize the tentative parcel map for that lot. And there is already a meter blank there. And so he will be paying the connection fee. And we also noted in his will serve letter per our backflow policy that buildings that have fire sprinkler systems, that we have the requirements that they install a backflow device and test it annually. So I just put a copy of that will serve letter in the packet.
Are we, this looks good. Are we, I saw that we've spent some money associated with some of those developments. Have we received any deposits from anyone yet on anything? I know we've sent them letters that we need deposits. Have we received any money?
No.
On Creekside, we have not, they have not signed the agreement, but they will be required to pay us $25,000 when they sign the agreement. Sims, I don't believe we have a deposit, but Sims has paid, I think, regularly, hasn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
Sims is very...
Well, we have two different SIM projects now, okay. to clarify. So the San Rafael one, there's really not a, we didn't have to, he paid the original, like, I think the $850 for us to do our initial review for the San Rafael site. And we have not received anything for the other project that Jeff attended that meeting for.
Right. And I saw we've spent, so is it the Sims TPM? Is that the one?
Tentative parcel map.
Okay. So we've spent, we've been billed from North Star. It's not a bunch of money. It's $420 or something like that. But, we also talked about getting some money from them before we move forward on these, but it sounds like he's playing things as he goes. And Creekside the same way, a couple $100 with North Star on that. So just want to make every sure we're remembering our policy on that.
Yeah.
I continue to separately track my time and build projects. So we are doing that at the district, and Sims, I have no doubt about. You all know Keeney, and he's a hard person to tie down when it comes to the dollar. So, he needs us. As soon as he gets approval of his subdivision, he will need to start work on it. And that's when, it's pretty simple. No deposit, we do nothing.
So the way the policy reads, so going back to the Durham-Dayton, Sims at Durham-Dayton, we can ask him to pay the $850 fee, which would then allow us to spend Jeff's time determining what the deposit to process that will be on our end. Mm-hmm. Should we do that?
Well, I think the letter. Yeah, let me check. I have no problem going back to Tony and asking him that now that we're starting some work, can he make a deposit?
Well, yeah, but usually we have it. I'm just going by the policy that they pay $850, which is our time, covering our time to even do what we've already done.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does that include Jeff's work as well, Cammie?
Yeah, so the way we structured that initial kind of preliminary review was kind of an hour of staff time, an hour of legal, and an hour of engineer somewhere in there, so that we could all say, yes, we need a development agreement. Yes, it'll be X amount we should request as the deposit.
That's really just to get the ball rolling kind of deal. So, okay.
Did Sims install a backflow device on the first house that he built there?
On San Rafael? I don't know, because I don't think we had explicitly stated that. And I don't, was that Tony at that time too?
Well, there's been two houses built in there. I'm pretty sure we didn't do that first one, but Tony Sims bought the 2-acre lot and split it, and they're just finishing up the first house right now.
Right.
We either Cammie or I can check in with him on that one. That needs to be done.
Anything else, Raymond?
Cammie, you had a question or something about on Durham-Dayton Highway, Hutton or something? Somebody with a well that was going dry and was asking to connect?
Oh, yes. Shoot, now I'm not remembering the whole... Yes, there is somebody they are located. It's that email I sent. Is that correct, Raymond?
Yeah.
Yes. So there's someone, he is concerned that it's the email that I sent where I thought we should talk about the a gentleman is located between two properties that are currently served by the district. He has a well. He's worried about his well going dry and would like to connect to the district and what that would require to do that. And Mike looked at the site, and so just needing clarification on what we would be charging him. Mike said where his property is located, the line is on the opposite side of the street, so we would have to install a lateral to wherever he would have a meter on his site. Would be, Mike was thinking, it's probably about $7,000 to $8,000 just to dig up the street and then repair it, and then what we would be charging for a connection fee for his lot.
Well, I don't think the connection fee would be applicable because the lot was created before we had that rule in effect. But we probably would be expecting him to pay for the lateral, I'm guessing.
Capacity fees should still be in effect unless he already paid them originally or had an original connection. If this is a brand new connection to the district, this is a capacity fees would be in effect.
Well, so far in the past, we've always gone with if the lot was created before the 2011 rate increase when we brought all those in effect that we didn't charge, because that otherwise now we're talking again about Ed McLaughlin's subdivision and that lot that just hooked up there on Faber.
I agree that's happened, but the spirit of the law is so in the thought process is that the ratepayers have been paying for the infrastructure upgrades through the whole period of time. And this person's going to have a well the well's a bunch of shit now. And mm-hmm. Now he wants to connect to a great system, and we're going to allow him to connect for free, where the ratepayers have been able to be able to pay for his capacity that he's now going to connect to.
Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying. I think my concern is more about treating everybody.
Yep, I get you.
And I mean, that's kind of how in the past where we drew the line, you know. And I think, you know, mainly just to not to dig up all these other agreements that were handshake agreements that were made back in the day.
Yep.
Trying to fight those out. So.
I think if somebody had had connected to the system or had committed to connecting to the system, I think that's one criteria or part of the equation that we need to consider when talking about grandfathering in. But if somebody was on a well before 2 years ago, they had no intention of connecting, nor had been part of that grandfathering. They didn't want to be included in that. So I think when it comes to that, it's almost a separate, not agreement, but I think it's a separate, you know, I don't think it was included in those guys that didn't have wells and wanted to be connected once they built a house on it. I mean, it seems like it's might be two separate scenarios.
Yeah. Well, we've had a guy over on the Midway that we connected here several years ago, and he had a well, and he went on the system. And then I think we had somebody,
wait a second, on the Midway, which location are you talking about on the Midway?
Did we lose
Ram? I think Ben's playing Xbox again.
I have to tell my son to turn down the volume of his voice so you guys wouldn't hear him shouting expletives at whatever game he's playing.
All right. Well, I think we'll have more discussion, but I think there's something in there. I think we're on the right track. So let's keep going.
Well, and I just want to say on this, Jeff, I think this is going to be your bailiwick, because this goes right back to Mr. Whatever his name is. I'm trying to blank on it.
Button.
Mr. Button's argument is that we are allowing construction and new connections to have a better deal than, and that the existing customers are paying for their connection. So I think we need to be very clear on where we're moving forward with this, that, okay, we made mistakes in the past, but doesn't mean we have to make mistakes into the future. And that is a yes.
Kevin, I agree wholeheartedly with you. When Cammy discussed this with me, I said he pays the current connection fee, whatever that is. And she recalled or called to my attention the fact that we basically allowed people to come in similar situations for the $650. And I'm hearing what Raymond is saying, but there has to be, I mean, that can't be grandfathered in forever because we have so much undeveloped land in Durham.
I agree.
We would bankrupt ourselves if we were to do that.
Well, and under the fairness doctrine, if there is such a thing, it doesn't pass the smell test.
Yeah.
Is this something we want to put on the agenda of the future for a more detailed discussion, or if we're under attorney's report or something?
Yeah, is this this has been a formal request by the individual, correct?
Yes, and we just want to be able to tell them what we're going to charge them.
Yeah, we need to do an estimate of material, you know, an estimated cost, and probably include in there the connection to the system and say, hey, here's our estimate.
And if Kevin is back on, if not, I'll
speak Raymond. Is.
Raymond, excuse me. Raymond, can you give me a time frame at which the district perhaps came up with its grandfathered policy that I might go back and look at the minutes of the district?
Well, I think, I mean, the date, the cutoff date was when we had our first rate increase.
Okay.
I remember. Was 2011 our first rate increase?
Yep. That'll get me out. I'll definitely go back to that.
I don't know that we, I mean, we've talked about this several times. I don't know that anything was ever drafted and adopted. This was all, we talked about it with Mark Adams as well. Trying to figure out where to draw that line, and a couple times we had consensus that it was the lot, any lot created after that rate increase was grandfathered in as far as the connection.
Good. I appreciate that.
And I think what would be helpful for me is are we charging the connection fee? If it's an existing residence, maybe on a well, if it's a vacant parcel that they're now building something, you know, are we charging the connection fee? Are we charging the construction costs of installing a lateral from the meter wherever the meter is going to be located? And,
well, and if the way my understanding has been, and I've answered a couple of your emails on this. We can go back and look at those, but any lot that was created prior to the date of that 2011 date, if the lot was created prior to that, it was considered to be in the district and it wasn't subject to the connection fee. That was the easiest and cleanest way to make that determination. If it doesn't have a meter, it's subject to the $650 meter fee.
Right.
And then And then as far as everything on our side of the meter, we've gone both ways. I think we've done it depending on whether it benefits us to have that person connected or not, onto whether or not we paid for the lateral or we asked the developer to pay for the lateral. I think on like those three apartments there on the corner of Faber and Goodspeed, I think we made them pay for the lateral, I believe.
Yes, we did.
So I think I can't think of anything off the top of my head where we paid for the lateral, but I think we have. I know we were willing to pay for the lateral for Abshire's across the street to resolve that issue, but I don't think that's ever come to fruition.
So Raymond, so let me clarify. So any lot that was created before 2011, which I guess you could argue everything's a lot within the sphere of influence, is whether built on or not would be subject to that 650 only, whether they were in or out of the system. I don't think we've been consistent with that, because I would argue we charged.
When we did the three apartments, they had to pay for two connections. They had one lot that was in the district that counted. They created three, so now they had to pay for two.
So if they're going to subdivide, I mean, in an existing lot, then they're going to be subject to all the connection fees.
Right. It was Dollar General.
Wait, yeah. I thought we only put one connection on that on the three lots, and then they, is there three connections there?
Oh, you know what? You might be right. You might be right.
There's what we said, one parcel, one connection, and we
have one. I'm sorry, that was a bad.
And they paid for the lateral, and they paid for the connection fee, and they paid for the meter because they needed a special meter that could handle fire flow.
Yeah, I don't think they paid the connection fee.
Pretty sure.
Who is that? Again?
The three apartments.
The triplex there.
Yeah.
I believe they paid a capacity fee on that, and then they went down in capacity, and we gave them a refund.
Yeah, because they originally gave them an inch and a half, and we charged them for an inch and a half, and the only reason they needed an inch and a half is for fire flow. So we went back and only charged them for the inch, because the other half inch was for just on demand. And
well, on the Dollar General, I know we did. We charged them one connection fee. And they made that into two lots.
So maybe we can table this discussion, Jeff. I'm going to put this on your.
I'm going to do my homework and I'll report.
Yep. And the other thing I would like to understand is define capacity fee associated with what we've passed. And, you know, kind of separate that from an annexation fee associated with that, too.
Good.
Okay. We are done. I guess that was under the will serve letter from Joey Sims. All right, let's move along. Anything else, Cammie?
No.
That was a little off topic. All right, let's move on to number 10, Vina GSA.
That one was, will we serve?
Other will we serve? Yes, we will.
Vina GSA, so the draft GSP will be coming out in September. All the chapters are currently drafted, so they're compiling the documents, making changes per comments from the SHAC as well as the board. We've been really focused on most recently the interbasin coordination information that has been a topic among various SHAC members. So we've been talking about that. The chapter that has yet to be finalized is the implementation chapter. So that will be in the September release draft. We will, with regard to the meeting schedule, We just had this SHAC meeting today. There's no September meeting. That will be replaced with a kind of a workshop that includes the SHAC and the board and everyone else. That meeting is actually 99% scheduled for Monday, October 4th. It will be at the Masonic Center in the evening. So today we discussed with the SHAC a little bit of the format and ideas for that. And then we have moved around some meetings just because the management committee would really like to be able to have the SHAC meetings kind of before the board. It's been kind of so much time passes from where when the SHAC meets to the board meeting. So some of those dates might shift towards the end of the year. But the next board meeting is September 8th and then November 15th and December 15th. So that's all to report with that. And today's SHAC meeting focused on Tuscan Water District. And yeah. And they're accepting comments, I think, through September. So, for the Tuscan Water District.
Is this for LAFCO comments? What do you mean?
Yes, the LAFCO comments. So you and I have time, Matt.
Okay.
One thing that was brought up at the board meeting for Vina GSA was a budget for the GSA once its GSP is approved. And the numbers are astronomical, as you can well imagine.
Or not, depending on your perspective.
They are astronomical, and I think that's for many persons' perspective. But they're looking at possible grant funding for a large part of it. Both Cammie and I have been adamant that we are not able to play per capita basis, that if we are going to be a part of it, it ought to be based on acreage, total acreage, or water connections, or things of that nature. Because if we're looking at $500,000 budget for operation of the Vina GSA, and they're thinking that member entities are going to be paying a large share of that, they need to be
or equal share. Yeah. So
need to be reconsidering it. So stay tuned. We're going to have to make our position quite clear very early on. We you know, $5,000 a year is a stretch for us.
Yeah.
I'm having heartburn as why we're even part of the GSA right now, to be honest with you.
I think, you know, ultimately, hopefully, one of the biggest things that we'll see and ask funding for is are to help fill in the data gaps. And I think that eventually Durham will have to determine what our contribution to the drawdown of the aquifers, even though it is probably minor in comparison to some of our surrounding ag users. But because we provide residential water, we might want to know our contribution. And I think, you know, really having a discussion of what we pull out and what we charge people for, and seeing where there's loss in the system and things like that. So we're actually recharging the groundwater essentially through any leaks that we may have. But yeah, it seems.
But as far as the benefit to us, I mean, it appears that we probably would be better off being our own GSA, and then we could be just like Rock Creek and sit up there and we have three votes.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. All of a sudden they're their own and they roll in and they've got seven votes against that's not right. What's going on?
Well, that's exactly what I was asking Raymond when I was inquiring on a lot of this stuff. I mean, it seems like it's come full circle.
I think this is a very good question that we have to give some consideration to, because this has become pricey beyond imagination. And so far the county has been paying the lion's share of it. It's been getting funding through state and grant monies. You know, we're talking about regulation enforcement obligations coming up in the future. And so we really need to revisit our status. Do we want to back out of this and just have an MOU?
Like
Butte College with the GSA. You know, we have three wells. We now know the depth of the wells. We're a peanut in the county. We are a peanut in the Vina GSA, and maybe we need to refocus and revisit whether we just want to have an MOU similar to what Butte College has with the district.
And what would that entail?
It would allow us to attend meetings, but it would be a simple 3-4 page MOU that basically says we will not do anything contrary to what the the GSP provides. I'll circulate copies of the Butte College MOU that you can take a look at. And I believe there's also one for Rock Creek too.
Can I ask a question real quick? Uh-huh. What other municipal water district is on the board for the Vina?
Cal
Water.
Cal Water.
They're on the board.
No, the City of Chico is on the board. So it's the County of Butte, the City of Chico, and us.
I'm sorry, Kevin, to answer. That was, we're member agencies, so we're on the management committee is what I meant.
Cal Water's on the management committee?
No, not Cal. No, but they. No,
they're on the shack. They're on
on the shack. Yeah.
They're on the shack, and that's their only involvement. No, there are only three entities, city, county, and us, and we are the only members of the board, and then we have non-member representatives too.
And so I still think there's a advantage, especially when you started getting into this budget issue, that you can promote that municipal water districts obviously are low water users. They're going towards to promote health and safety of their community, that they shouldn't share the lion's cost of this district, that the ag users shall take the brunt of the cost associated with this. I think that there's still value associated with this that could be long-term benefits to the district at the end. If we want to bug out after that, I have no problem. I understand it's a time commitment and I haven't done anything. So I'm just a cheerleader here. But I do think that our voice is strong in that we can still promote that really the municipal districts should not share any of the lion's cost of this because it's an ag-centric problem.
Yes, agreed. And I agree with your synopsis. We have one vote at the table now. If that vote has to be diluted, so be it. But I think we're more active being on the inside, better off being on the inside than being on the outside. But we do definitely have to reconsider what is expected of us and what we can provide.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that 100%.
Well, and then the other problem too is we were one vote of five. Now, since we're having these joint meetings with Rock Creek, we're now one vote in 10 or 12, which.
But does Rock Creek have jurisdiction over the Vina budget?
No, they vote independently on behalf of Rock Creek. So we're having these joint meetings so each district can determine how we are going to develop our GSP.
So anything that we vote on the GSP, you know, they've got five votes to R1 or however many is on their board. Look at my sheet here and count them up.
Actually, it'd be 50-50. 50% by Vina and 50% by Rock Creek.
Not the way the meeting was run.
Oh, I know that. And not only that, but just their influence over the meeting is just more like 90%.
Well, they're all farmers. They.
And I can tell you, Rock Creek is out a tremendous amount of money to get to where they're at currently. So for them to be their own GSA, they've paid a pretty penny to get that.
Well, they're supposed to be assessing, was it $10 an acre? What was their assessment?
They mentioned Tustin Water District.
That's
$10 an acre for the Tustin Water District. And many of the landowners in Rock Creek are prominent in the movement to create the Tustin Water District. So basically you'll have Rock Creek over here and Tustin Water District. Remember, Rock Creek is a reclamation district. It's not a water district. And so the new water district, Tustin, will probably incorporate, as far as water district functions go, Rock Creek Reclamation District. So Reclamation District will continue to represent reclamation projects being undertaken in its territory. But as far as water and the use of water, the landowners in Tuscan Water District, there will be some similarity between them and the landowners in Rock Creek Reclamation District.
Does it overlap them?
Mm-hmm.
It does?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll have to look at that map.
So this is getting the time, we definitely are going to, be serious about our future involvement in this and how much we can afford to do and how much we need to do, because we just can't run with the big dogs on this one.
Well, this is one of the reasons I brought it up last time, and I've called pretty much everybody on the board to discuss it individually, is not in a weird way, but to get us together to discuss some of these things, because I was completely overwhelmed at the last meeting. Like, holy cow, what are we agreeing to? And is this the best move for us as a district? I was completely taken aback with how far things had come. Maybe my naive not being more involved, but boy, I just felt overwhelmed. And I think we need to be prepared for what's going to happen and really understand what our constituents want in the go forward plan with this thing.
Right. That's a good point.
Well, I think as the GSA determines how it's going to fund itself is when those discussions can really, if the GSA continues to get grant money, then there's less of a contribution that we'll have to make. More, it will probably be more in line with in-kind, match with being, the district pays me to attend those meetings. So, but if we go to there, they can always do a Prop 218 hearing, all of those things, which then kind of changes it a little bit. And what's it going to be? And then we might have to see how other districts or other GSAs are doing it for, and a lot of it is based on the number of acres is what you're assessed. So it could be something smaller, like if, less than 1 acre in size or zoning, it could be based on zoning or land use or whatever. And, but those are things that the GSA really needs to take a look at in planning for the financial future.
Yeah. And I think Kevin brings up a good point. It should be acres, but not only acres, it ought to be a combination of acres and use. Mm-hmm. So we have primarily residential use in our district. There's nowhere near the water usage in our district that they would have in any other irrigation district or water district.
West Yost manages the Santa Rosa Plain GSA, and they are starting their fee after the first of the year, but it is based on a whole bunch of different parameters, including acreage, land uses, the number of wells on someone's site, what they're connected to in terms of water. So, and so the assessment varies, and it's different things like that that I think the GSA will have to look at. We're just not there yet.
And I think it would be good for Cami or me, probably Cami, to begin this dialogue with city and county staff. So Kelly and Christina and Cami probably ought to get clear where we draw the line. And $5,000 has been a stretch for us. We don't have the budget they have. We have a 6-digit budget. They have, 7, 8, 9-digit budgets.
And they are aware of our that position, because I've told them, I said, we're not going to be able to pay equally to what the county and Cal Water can pay. And they know that. And they too, they're just right now, it's all grant funded with some in-kind service, but it's still, they understand that.
The rubber is about ready to reach the road. And we have to cut a new deal right now.
I guess, yeah, looking at the timing, maybe get through the adoption of the GSP and then reevaluate it once they figure out how we're going to fund and manage the GSA. And the county needs to determine that as well. So the board of supervisors.
Much more to come, I'm sure.
I'll send you some MOUs, and we will revisit this next month.
Do you want me to agendize it?
Yes, please. All right. Any director's comments, Raymond or Kevin? Anything to comment on?
I got a question. Cami, you go over Mike's logs, right?
Yeah, I reviewed it, and I'll take a closer look. This one seems a little different than before, I think, because of how many hours he put in.
Well, it's just my understanding is we pay a flat rate for 48 hours. And right. So that 48 hours should be full before we start getting charged additional hours.
Right. Unless it was done after 6 p.m. or on the weekends.
Correct. Unless it's emergency hours or whatever he has called. Yeah, that's above and beyond for sure. But
if he hit his 48 hours, but 5 of them were on the weekend, and he didn't go over that 48, is there a differential in pricing? Do you just charge the difference? I mean, how do you factor in for that?
He gets paid before the 48, whether he works it or not, because that gives
like
him the theory is that gave him a little flexibility in the wintertime when he didn't quite get 48 hours in. And then in the summertime, if he went over one or two, he wouldn't charge us. But the base rate counts for approximately 48 hours per month.
48 plus 10 for the meter reading. So
exactly. I'm not including that. You're right. That's separate.
So I think there needs to be a recal. I'll look at this one. Yeah.
I made a note to circulate his service contract to everybody.
Yeah. So like if he worked 48 and a half hours for the month, I mean, if he wanted to charge us that half hour, he could, but I wouldn't really expect him to, because I would imagine that there'd probably be a couple months in the winter when he didn't quite get the 48 that we paid him for, but whatever. If he wants to charge anything over 48, he can, but he's got to get to that 48 before he starts charging us.
Right.
Unless it's an half hour emergency
right.
Weekend hour, then that's above and beyond the call.
And I'm thinking maybe he just, yeah, this one was a little odd.
Well, it looks like he just charged, and he just said anything over 2 hours a day instead of 48 hours a month.
Right.
2 hours a day.
Yeah. Okay. I'll talk to him about it.
And I want to make sure we're treating him right too, because he's doing an amazing job. I mean, I think he was a little off key tonight, but overall, I really feel like we're lucky.
Oh yeah.
He's very responsive, and he's very meticulous on the work that gets done. And I think he's been over a little bit on this bidding thing. I mean, that's the bids are so botched that somebody's gonna get pissed. I mean, yeah. I won't be hearing rumbling from Brown and Horn through the grapevine. Yeah.
No, I think if we standardize it, it'll be good. That way it's just fair.
Yeah.
That's why we have bid practices.
Okay. Thank you, Raymond. Kevin, anything on your end?
Nope. I'm good.
Cam, anything with you?
I'm good.
Jeff, you're all good? Smiling? Good. Right, all good to go? All right.
Yeah. I know it's your time now.
All right. Good deal. With that, I'll move to adjourn. So don't forget to stop the recording, Cammie.
All right.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
All right. Good night.